So just a friendly couple of announcements. We'd like to remind you that there is no audio or video recording this evening, so we would appreciate if you would take out your phones and either throw them on the ground and smash them, or, you know, if you don't want to do that, you could just shut them off or put them on vibrate, as long as we don't see the screens. And from where I am, I can see every one of your screens, so I'll come and find you. For your convenience, we do have CDs for sale. There is only 112 more shopping days until Christmas. And we need to get home tomorrow. We haven't paid for the plane fare yet, so that would be a big help. Enjoy the show. Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome Judy Collins.
Thank you. Well, we're so happy to be here. And I just, Richard Thompson, it just rocks. Wow. Last year, the day that the hurricane that didn't come threatened to come, we were here at 8 o'clock in the morning a year ago today. And we had an afternoon show for some reason. Anyway, here we are now. I'm so happy. I'm so grateful we could do this. Yeah. You know, you're looking, of course, at the American Idol of 1956. I want you to remember that when you think about all those years. And the first time I ever played at Tanglewood, I was here with the Modern Jazz Quartet. Was anybody here that day? You were all too young, I know. Okay. Well, I'll be damned. Here comes your ghost again. But that's not unusual. It's just that the moon is full. And you happen to call. And here I sit, and I'll have telephone. Facebook. But mainly, my sister wanted me to start wearing this. This is my own color. I started writing my own songs in 1966. Until then, I was the only girl folk singer standing who didn't write songs. Oh, all the others, the guys wrote their own songs too. I was the standout. But it was that year that I met Leonard Cohen, and I met him. Thank you, God. I was friendly with this woman in the village named Mary Martin, not the one who flies, of course, but she was one of Leonard's best friends, and she grew up with him in Montreal, and she and her girlfriends and all their families thought, Leonard is, that's it, he's the best, he's the smartest of any of us, he's going to be whatever heights that he goes to. And then she said, she and I would go out to dinner, and girlfriends' dinners, and you know how girls always talk more than boys do. And so she would tell me about Leonard, and I didn't know him. I had no idea who she was talking about. She said, there's this guy. We grew up with him. He's so brilliant. He writes poetry. We go and buy the books. We take them home. We try to read them. We don't understand anything about them. And I said, well, what's the matter with them? She said, well, they're obscure. And I expressed sympathy. Yes, it sounds too bad. I'm sorry. I don't know him or anything about him. But I'm sorry. And then one day she called me. That was in 64, 65. And she called me in 1966. And she said, well, Leonard wants to come and see you because he wants to sing you his new songs. So I said, Mary, are they obscure? And she said, oh, yes. So Leonard came to my house, my apartment, and knocked on the door. And I opened the door and I thought, I don't care if he can't write songs. We'll think of something. And after I'd recorded a few of his songs, he came to see me one day and he said, you've made me famous. I said, good. He said, but I don't understand one thing, which is why you're not writing your own songs. And I raced home to my Steinway piano. I spent my whole youth playing the piano, practicing, playing with orchestras, concertizing, going on my father's radio show, singing for the school show. You know, my life was all laid out already by the time I was 16. And I ran home and I sat down and I wrote my first song, which was called Since You've Asked. Maybe you know it. Anyway, this is my most recent, one of my most recent songs. I have a new album called Spellbound. Oh, it's here. I think it's here. So goody. Buy them all. And it's Spellbound is an album of all my own songs. The first time I've ever done that in all these, however many years there have been. Rivers crash the canyon wall. Since May of 21, and so why am I telling you this? I remember. We honestly, I hadn't had a vacation in 40 years, so I very much took advantage of the time, and I started writing, finishing up this album. But also, I noticed that people had different kinds of problems, that, you know, things came up that don't normally come up when you're not locked down. And for instance, one of my friends called me and he said, I have a real problem. I said, what's going on? He said, I can't stop smoking. And I said, have you ever tried? And he said, no. I said, well, you better go see my doctor because he's really good. He's very non-judgmental. He has a lot of tricks for this sort of thing. So go see him. You went to see Dr. Brun, and Dr. Brun said, okay, so first of all, why do you want to stop smoking? And my friend said, I don't. I mean, I'm here because Judy told me I had to come and see you. And so my doctor said, well, you know what happens when any of us, not just you, but any person or animal, I guess, anybody who takes a cigarette into their body, God takes an hour of your life and gives it to Keith Richards. Remember who told me that story, because if they could tell me that one, I'm sure they have others, you know, that they're holding back. wanted to tell you this when I was singing the Joan Baez song, but I've known her for 60 years. And, you know, we're getting to be the same age. We weren't before, but now we are. She and I have recorded a Pete Seeger song together in 1968. Had I a golden thread and a needle so fine, I would weave a magic thread of rainbow design, of rainbow design. Pete Seeger song. And it was on an album called, thank you. Yeah. I dedicate this album to Pete Seeger and Woody Guthrie because they really started the whole thing. I don't know if you know this, but they started writing songs to support the union. That's what they did. That's why they wrote those fabulous songs. You know. There once was a union mate who never was afraid, so forth and so on. So Joan and I, as I said, we've been friends for years. I was very close to her sister Mimi. I adored her, and Joan, her big sister, who also wrote a song with Dick Farina that I recorded. If somehow you could pack up your sorrows and give them all to me, you would lose them. I know how to use them. Give them all to me. Dick would be so happy to hear you singing this. Would you like to go on the road? So Joan is always trying to get me to sing this song of hers that goes, how long since I spent the whole night in a twin bed with a stranger, with his warm arms all around me. And I was online not too long ago, and I heard that somebody had misunderstood the lyrics, and they thought that it said, how long since I spent the whole night in a twin bed with a stranger, with the Mormons all around me.
Understand me. Please try to understand. Help me.
16 years old, out on the road, trying to get to the Nez Perce Reservation out in Idaho. He was not an American Indian. I grew up listening to him talk about Chief Joseph and manifest destiny and what we had done not only to the Indians but everybody else that we seemed to meet up with. He wasn't very happy about that. Recently, I got some pictures. My dad was blind from the age of 4, and he was an amazing man. When he was 4, he was out standing in the pasture near the house, and he was clapping. And my great-grandfather, John Booth, whom I adored, said to him, "Charlie, what are you doing?" And my father said, "I'm listening to the barn." That's how he found his radar. That's how he found out that he was going to get through life and be okay. And he was a great musician, and he had a radio show for 30 years. But he was also a great reader, and he loved what he did, and so did everybody else. His radio show was very influential to me when I was growing up, because I would hear him also practicing. You know, he would do all the songs, the Rodgers and Hart, and "I'll be seeing you in all the old familiar places that this heart of mine embraces all day through." And then some other day he'd be singing, "Oh, Danny boy, the pipes are calling from glen to glen and down the mountainside."
Okay.
But come back when summer's in the meadow, or when the valley's hushed and white with snow, it's I'll be
a new song about not only the Nez Perce, but all the tribes. The thunder of the hooves of Indian ponies, wild with running beautiful eyes, flash into my dreams along the prairie, the heroes to the spirits of the night, with buffalo who used to roam the mountains, through the canyons, through the windblown grass, hopes that beat past swiftly running rivers and sounds centuries like breaking glass. Shot from trains and shot from painted horses, shot down running in their murdered fear. Gone before the quarter of the century, leaving nothing but the sound of trails of blood and sorrow, ancient creatures innocent of crime, manifest in destiny they flounder, like the wandering footsteps of the blind.
With no maddening secrets
they could keep. The thunder of the hooves of Indian ponies, while with running beautiful as a lake, flash into my dreams along the prairie. The heroes soothing the nest birds of the night.
I hope you saw the Newport Festival this year with our amazing Joni Mitchell singing and performing. She's a brave woman and, of course, one of the most gifted songwriters, I think, of any century that I know of, anyway. And I do want to tell you how I met her. If I can just remember his name.
Al Grossman? No, Al Cooper.
Oh yes, that was it. It was about 3 a.m. and it was 1967, and you can bet your life that I was passed out. You know, I didn't do many drugs. I mean, it was a time of sex, drugs, and rock and roll, and I didn't do many drugs. I was afraid they would interfere with my drinking, so. And I was sound asleep, of course, passed out. And the phone rang, and it was Al Cooper. And he was one of my best friends, and we used to hang out in the village all the time and, you know, wander around, listen to Blood, Sweat, and Tears, and he would say, what do you think of the songs? Do you like the guys? How do you think we're going to do? And so forth. And he knew my phone number by heart, and I said, the phone rang, and I was out of a deep sleep. Oh, to sleep like that again. And I said, what's the matter? It's 3 a.m. Is there something wrong? Do you need to have me call somebody for you? He said, no, I have a surprise for you. And I said, oh, okay. He said, well, I was at the club, and there was this girl there, and she was in love with a drummer, and she told me she was a songwriter, and she was good looking, so I followed her home. I figured I couldn't lose. And of course, I know that you're in the studio this week. I'm always in the studio, by the way. And so I said, well, you said you write songs. You want to play some for me? And she said, sure. And I said, can I follow you home so you don't have to play while the band is playing, because I can't hear them here. So I followed her home, and by golly, she does write songs. And then he put Joni Mitchell on the phone, and she sang me both sides now. That's how it happened. So I'm going to sing you another one of her songs. I could sing that again, but you heard it once. Chelsea morning, and the first thing that I For writing that song in 1962 when I met him and recorded it, and I've carried it around like a talisman ever since. And of course it was, you know, it was fascinating to be there for all of that froth of talent that was pouring out of the village. And I was lucky. I was living on West 10th and Hudson, paying $135 a month. And going over to the Kettle of Fish for coffee and the breakfast, running into Tom Paxton, who would say, "Now, I just wrote this song. Bottle of wine, fruit on the vine, when you gonna let me get sober? Let me alone, let me go home, let me go back and start over." And then I'd go over and I'd hear, oh, Peter Lafarge. Do you remember Peter Lafarge? Does anybody in this room remember Peter Lafarge? God, those magic nights. And of course, I got to, I don't know if I have time to even tell this, but I got to the Village in 1961, the first time. I started singing professionally in, as professionally as I could, in 1959, and started the circuit of the clubs that existed in those days. And we all thought, we didn't know that there was a folk revival. Who knew that it was going to, you know, launch this whole thing that was going on? I mean, I didn't know you could make any kind of living doing this. I mean, my dad had a radio show for 30 years, and he sang like an angel and worked his ass off. But I found folk music at 15 when I heard on the radio, I was supposed to be practicing the piano, but I heard on the radio a song from a movie called The Bold Black Knight, which was an Alan Ladd movie. And the song was, "The gypsy rover came over the hill, down through the valley so shady. He whistled and he sang till the greenwood rang, and he won the heart of a lady." You know, it's about a young girl who runs off into the woods with a hippie. And when her father realizes that she's gone, he jumps on a horse and rides into the woods, and when he finds her, he realizes that she's run off with Bill Gates. So, anyway, it was a magical time in the village. It really was. And one day, I got to know Al Grossman. He had a club in Chicago called the Gate of Horn, where everybody played, and I sang there. You know, I started out, I opened for Josh White and the Terriers and Will Holt and Dolly Jonah, and it was just magical. And so by the time I got to the village, I was at the Gertie's Folk City in 1961, and Dylan was there. His name was Robert Zimmerman. And he was singing old Woody Guthrie blues, badly chosen, badly sung. I thought he was going absolutely nowhere, sort of like his friend Leonard. Anyway, I got a call from Al Grossman in 63. I had already recorded Dylan. I was the first, I think, one of the first people to do that. And 2 years later, Al called me and said, "I'm having a party up at my place in Woodstock, wherever it is. Okay, Woodstock." And I wasn't invited to sing at Woodstock, so that's why I always forget what to call it. So he said, "I'm going to have a party, and I want you to come, and Bobby's coming, and Susie Rodolo is going to be there, and a few other people, including Bruce Langhorne." Bruce Langhorne was a great guitarist. I'm sure you know him up here. And he and I traveled together a lot. We went to, with Arlo, we went to Japan together with Mimi and Arlo. Anyway, he was at the party too. He is the person that is supposed to have been the inspiration for the song I'm going to sing you now. I heard in the middle of the night, was probably passed out, but I did wake up again. I woke up and I heard Al had told me to bring my terry cloth robe and my little
toothbrush and so on, and stay overnight. So I was just passed out, but I woke up and heard this voice. So I crept down the stairs and I sat on this marble stair looking at a blue door that was shut tight.
Wait only for my boot heels to be wandering.
Thank you. When I was growing up, well, I guess I was in my 20s, when I, can we turn down this speaker just a little bit? Yeah. Okay. What was I saying? Oh, yes, Thomas Merton. I'm not a Catholic, but I really loved his writing, and I read the Seven Story Mountain. And so the years went by, and I knew something about him. I knew he was Catholic. I knew that he had spent a lot of his life in the Gethsemane Monastery near Louisville. And I knew that he had died in 1968. I knew the story that was put out was that he had been electrocuted accidentally when he stepped on a live wire from some kind of a fan. And it had been in Thailand. That much I knew. And during the pandemic, I started doing a lot of reading of his meditations, which are extraordinary, because he talks about everything that's going on in his life, not just being a Catholic and being, you know, at a monastery, but all the people that came to see him, about his reading, about his life and what he thought about. The church had already started to make noises about the fact that they didn't want him writing about the war in Vietnam. And he was offered the chance in 1968 to go to Thailand to be part of a big meditation event. The Dalai Lama invited him personally, and he was already very, very interested in the Zen and people like Thich Nhat Hanh and a lot of the meditators from the Eastern religions. So I went to my friend, the computer, and I asked the computer, "So what's going on? What are people thinking about this guy at the moment?" And when I reached the information, I found a book called The Martyrdom of Thomas Merton, which was published in 2015, and it said that he had not died of an accidental death. He'd been murdered, and they had discovered that he was in Thailand. Of course, the CIA was in Thailand. We were in Thailand. We were using all of the airfields in Thailand to bomb Cambodia and Vietnam, Laos, and so forth. So the place was crawling with CIA, you could be sure. After his death, he was, by the way, so many telling things. His body was flown out of Thailand back to Louisville by the army. No autopsy. No pictures. The guy who found him disappeared and was never heard from again. So it's all very spooky. And I decided I had to write a song about it. Oh yes, and the church, after he died, the church said, well, they issued a papal bull, which I don't know anything about this. From the point of view of, I'm not a Catholic, but I knew that what a papal bull is. They said that he will not be made a saint because he was against the war in Vietnam, which made him our best friend. The wind sang in the bare woods, and Thomas prayed by the tree. his voice, I saw his life and listened to his talk. People came from far away to stand there by the river. They saw his life, they saw his home, a searcher and believer. He visited with holy men, he meant to find the answer. He saw all wars were evil and the devil was the dancer. He dreamed of being a eagle with wings he would fly from the west to the north and the east. Through rain and sleet, through wind and snow, he'd find his way to bring us. When his heart led him to the place where he would die, the Dalai Lama welcomed him to Thailand. Prayers were prayed and joy was found and hearts were filled with calm. But in the afternoon, Thomas Merton's life was gone. The story was that he had died stepping from the bath, shocked by the electricity that lay there in his path. In holy robes the deed was done as the stars were shining bright. Years went by and lies were told, would the truth ever come to light? He dreamed of being an eagle with wings he would fly from the west to the north and the east. After he was buried, upon his desk concealed, the evidence of bullet holes finally was revealed. Somewhere in the shadow of life, the guilty ones live on. With silver in their pockets, they hide the smoking gun. Why are people so afraid of those who work for peace? JFK and Dr. King pray for wars to cease. He dreamed of being an eagle with wings he would fly from the west to the north and the east. Through rain and sleet, through wind and snow, he'd find his way to bring us peace. The wind sang in the bare woods and Thomas prayed for the trees. Heard him whisper through my dreams that life was a reprieve.
Thank you so much. Thank you. Windy day in Honolulu, looking out beyond the the hills. Memories and times of heartache, lays of lilies, daffodils. Here I lighted like a bird upon a bright blue water shore, with my hope and with my nightmares, praying I could swim in soar dark dreams of the sunlit days, while I drank down rum and hope, burning dreams and crimson lovers dancing on a thin dry. with her mind.
Thank you.
so sorry. I didn't mean to do that. Let's see. Now, of course, you all know. Well, I am so thrilled to be able to be here with Richard Thompson.
Fear the time.
Roberts.